probably
entrepreneur, manager.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. Nightlife, Imperial Soul. Is that how they say it? All of that. All of that. Connector, of facilitator, extraordinaire, good human. Good human. Good father. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, but yeah, just talk to us about early days, man. Atlanta, everything.
Yeah. Man, the journey started. I'm originally from Atlanta, from not East Atlanta, but from the East Side, which is Decatur, Georgia. I grew up between Decatur and Stone Mountain. And yeah, man, I went to college in Nashville for a year, Lipscomb University, and ended up transferring to Tennessee State, but never went because I dropped out and joined the Navy. Back then, I was trying to figure out really just a lot about myself. I grew up in a middle class area. The area has changed a little bit now. So like when cats hear where I'm from, they're like, oh, you from over there? And I'm like, yeah, but I don't think it's like it was. Y'all done turned it out. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
But yeah, man, I originally wanted to be a sports agent. Jerry Maguire, like, absolutely changed my life.
Mm. Okay.
I got a lot of my inspiration growing up from films. Rudy, like all the Rocky series is like my will to push through, and determination came from like all the classic films that we watched. So I watched a lot of those films all the time. Then I watched, you know, The Goodfellas, The Godfathers, and all that.
Yeah. Like,
that's where I learned my family values, I say.
Okay.
But wanting to be a sports agent, went to school. My brother slash best friend, we grew up together, but he was like the star athlete from where we were. And, you know, I used to go with him on his AAU trips and all that stuff. And when he was coming up, we were playing against like Jonas and Jarvis Hayes. They ended up playing for like the Wizards.
Okay.
Josh Smith was a couple years after us. Dwight came from the South Side. We were like 4 or 5 years older than them, but that was a lot. It was a lot of talent coming to Atlanta,
okay.
Especially in basketball. But during when I got out of college, or when I dropped out and I joined the Navy, I was never trying to be a military guy, but I was like doing a lot of stuff that I was like, I don't want to go down that path. Like just trying to figure it out, trying to get money, trying to hustle, trying to just do whatever we can just to.
Make it make sense.
You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Like, I'm really not that guy, but I learned the business of a lot of different things, as we all tend to find our entrepreneurial spirits. You know what I'm saying? And while I was in the Navy, man, I read Kevin Lyle's book, Making It Happen, and then the movie Brown Sugar came out. I never really realized there were a lot of different jobs in music. I just knew Russell, Puff, I heard Kevin Lyle's name before, Lior, and then I knew artists. I had no idea what everything else was. And then I saw Brown Sugar and I was like, what's an A&R? And then I started looking at all these little positions and like finding music books. And then I realized, I was like, yeah, I want to do this. I want to be, you know, an executive. I want to be this. So I got out the Navy, moved back to Atlanta early 04, like January 2004. And this is when Atlanta was like, you know, Luda was at his height. T.I. was at his height.
BME.
See, I was going at that. BME was like everywhere, like little John Esau boys. And BMF was all over the streets. Like Meech and them had billboards, BMF Entertainment, The World Is Ours. Like, so just trying to figure out how to get into the business is funny because a lot of people don't know this, but the first thing that I did, I went to an accountant and got a company started. My nickname used to be Knowledge because people used to be like, yo, how do you know like the most random facts about everything? Like, I'll just tell you where lights come from. Or did you know that birds in the summer, when they fly south, some of them stop over here? Like, the most random facts. And
okay.
I had a tattoo on my back. So I started Knowledge Records. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm a CEO. Got my company.
Knowledge.
And I found this little book called How to Become a CEO. And it started breaking down the C-suites and, like, everything that was in the book. And I was like, I'm not a CEO, I don't even have one employee. Like, what am I calling myself, you know? So I didn't want to be one of those guys that's like, you know, can't get right records. I'm the CEO moving around the streets with business cards, you know what I'm saying? So I just started figuring out like, all right, well, I need to start getting some experience. And I learned a lot of this stuff we were talking off camera, like about the military. One thing the military taught me was, it taught me process, it taught me chain of command, but it also taught me like you gotta work to get to this process. So like when you're on sea duty, I was on a destroyer, you have to get what's called a surface warfare qualification, which is like a little pin that goes above your medals and stuff. And so you have to learn like different jobs and really understand these things, then you get tested on it. But you learn a little bit about a lot. And I was in operations, so I learned a lot of operations stuff. Okay. But when I got all my qualifications, then I started wanting to learn more about how the ships run. So I went down to engineering, learned more about engineering, learned how to drive the ship. I started learning other people's jobs when I didn't have anything else to qualify for. And so I looked at that in music, and I thought back. I had a radio show when I was in college. During high school, I went to summer school at Phillips Academy, which is in Andover, Massachusetts. And that's when I started trying to learn how to scratch. And my man Nick used to teach me how to DJ, but that was the first time I cracked a mic. So when I got out the Navy, fast forward 4 or 5 years later, I'm like, all right, let me see if I can get a job in radio.
Okay.
Maybe I can take the radio knowledge and then get into a label system somewhere or something. But I had a little bit of experience working aboard. And so, you know, I got an internship at Q100, which is like KISS out here, the super pop station. Because V103 was the hottest urban station, and still is, but you had to be in college to be an intern there. And then Hot 107.9, nobody ever called me back. It is what it is. But I ended up, you know, they were like, yeah, come on up. So I went up there, and as an intern, you had to do 3 events a week, so I did 8. And then I started, you know, I had a job at T-Mobile during the day selling Sidekicks and Blackberries and you know,
all
doing
that
all
shit.
Those plans and stuff.
Okay.
And then there was a night show jock, Jeff Miles, who I'm still very close to this day. I asked him to let me sit in on his show. He said, sure. And, you know, 2 weeks later, I was like, hey, you want me to stack the CDs for you for the next hour? I would just say, oh, you need me to do this? Okay, I'll run and grab a coffee. I'll run to Baskin Robbins. And then he had like one intern on his show already, and then another guy that was like his name was Thomas the Porn Star. It's pop radio, so you know, you get
the yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah. You know, Thomas is out one day. Hey, Kenny, come on up here and fill in, because I throw in little jabs and little one-liners, because the difference people don't understand between urban and pop radio, they stay really segmented on their breaks. So if I got 20 seconds, there's no conversation. You got to get a line in and be good.
Yeah.
It's almost on like a professional NBA team. If you're not the star player, you get in, you're going to get 5 shots a game. You got to make 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
Got it.
So that's how I looked at it. I looked at it in numbers and percentages. If I can make him laugh just a little bit or say something, a little zinger, but still stay to who I am, I'll get a point. And, you know, long story short, I ended up being added on to the radio show. I never got paid because I was just an intern. But what it did do is it transitioned me to be able to host the Saturday Night Show. But now I get hired 6 months later, and I'm hosting the Saturday Night Mix Show before we go live at Vision. Because all the hot radio stations back then, there was this club Vision that was like the hottest club.
Yeah.
You know, Hot 107.9 Zona. It's like the Hood Night on the Thursday, the Upscale Urban Night on Friday, and then we used to call it the
What's
White
the
Night
guy, Alex?
Saturday. Yeah, Alex. Mike is hosting. Rest in peace to my Mike. Just, you know, we lost Mike last year. Mike taught me the club business. So we ended up having a relationship from there. But all of that stuff steamed from me trying to meet people. But then I was like, how do I meet people, though? So I'm going to bring you back to when I first moved to Atlanta. When I moved back to Atlanta, I was like, well, if everybody's going to Vision, there's a security company that works there, but I got to meet these people. So I went and got a job at that security company. So I was working security. I was 80 pounds lighter, but I have a martial arts background. I have a weapons background. And I was able to get in. You know, a lot of these clubs, you see these big guys. But I know, you know, certain things that I can do. And so I was able to show the owner, Sam, that I can handle myself. And I said, nah, don't send me to, like, the hood stuff where they shooting every night in Decatur. Like, let me go to, like, Velvet Room, Vision. Mm-hmm. And so he ended up putting me on those, and that's how I met everybody. I started meeting this person. I started meeting this person. And I worked that security job at night, maybe for a month and a half, because I got the radio internship. So I used that to tactfully find out how I can get in the face of all these other people. And so now I'm on the radio, and then it's October 2004. I'm the black dude on the white station in Atlanta. That was how people knew me. But I was like, all right, now I'm getting it here. So the other reason I thought about radio is, where do all the artists go? There was no streaming back then. I mean, iTunes was just, you know, just starting to get there. You got LimeWire, but every artist comes through the radio station.
Gotta go to the right promo run, whatever.
So, and even at, you know, at Q100, I like it because it taught me the pop world.
Yeah.
Like, I'm black, I'm from Decatur. Like, I know you can't tell me shit about the Dungeon family. You can't. I was growing up, I was really big in the Southern rap and then West Coast rap. Uh-huh. So, like, if you look at the posters now, it's, like, all Death Row stuff. I used to listen to Spice One, Ant Banks, like, you know what I'm saying? But then I had, you know, Kilo Ali, all the Outkasts, all yeah. the, you know, Dungeon Family. Like, I got super hyped when Killer Mike dropped that. I'm like, yeah, I feel like I'm a teenager again, you know?
That was fire.
And so I learned in pop music and how pop records rule, how radio ads records. I was able to start sitting in on the music meetings and stuff like that just to learn. Jermaine Dupri comes in one day giving away bikes because him and Jeff Miles were cool. And my boy Scooter was working with Jermaine at the time, so that's how me and him met. And so then my man, shout out to Mel Testamark, because Mel was the first one to give me opportunity. And Mel was running promo for So So Def. Scooter was running marketing for them. And when they came in, and my man Kadife, and when they came in the studio, first thing I was asking, I was like, yo, how can I get on, you know what I'm saying? How can I get an internship with y'all? Like, I want to come down. Mel was like, just come to the office, you know what I'm saying? We'll chop it up. Went to the office, and now I'm interning in radio. I'm interning in Social Def. I'm working at T-Mobile during the day. And then I'm only getting paid from T-Mobile because radio, you know, I was getting $8 an hour, $7 an hour. I was working 2 hours a week. So, you know, taxes was down. Yeah. Taxes and everything else, you know, that was $20.
Might as well keep that.
You know, a couple burgers. But that's how I started getting in. So when I started interning for So So Def, and the first record I ever worked was Oh, I Think They Like Me remix.
Oh, so I
was doing that when we was going around, you know, we'd go get the CDs burned. I would go to what they call the Bluff now in Atlanta. We get the CDs burned. I got them in my trunk. And then I'm going from everywhere from the Pool Palace to when T.I. opened his club, Crucial. Then we hit Blue Flame because Atlanta, all the records start in the strip clubs. Yeah. So that's how I knew all the strip club DJs, like X-Rated and... We used to have these DJ coalitions in Atlanta too. There was a Jeezy record where he said, I know some super friends in the Legion of Doom. He was shouting out all the DJ crews in that record on that first that Thug Motivation 101. And so you had to go to all these crews. They had a little record pools, or I know this one at this strip club. It'd be the little rinky dink stuff. I know he over here, but he also go to Magic City on Fridays.
Cersei.
So let me, yeah, it's just all the cats, right? We just started working these records, and then I remember I was at the office one day, and I was talking to Scooter, and he had just did this Pontiac Solstice deal for Ludacris, to where it was Pontiac came out with the first convertible car, and Chris was like the spokesperson of it. Scooter brokered that deal, and he had did Jermaine had a vodka deal that he did this three vodka deal, and we just started hanging out and kicking it. We was, you know, I remember Entourage had just started, so we'd be like smoking weed and watching Entourage, because he had dropped out of Emory, but he still lived over in that area by the campus.
Okay.
And so, you know, we just got cool, and then he had told me about this rapper, because I was like, yo, I really want to, like, work with artists. I'm starting to see, like, what I want to do. And he was like, I can help him out with this rapper, Kato, and this group called Overdose that we had, was working on. And I was like, man, whatever you need, like, I'm down. So now I got another... And turn
it down. Just piling it on.
And, you know, I'm still going to T-Mobile at 8 o'clock in the morning, opening the store, driving 45 minutes outside of Snellville to get to work. Because that was keeping the little lights on at the roach-infested apartment I had. That was like a little studio with the two burners on there called the Darlington in Buckhead. I was in Buckhead, but I was like in the trash of Buckhead. You know? But it was just like, I just wanted to make it. So, yeah. Like, whatever I could do to get there. And then, you know, obviously... As many people know, like, you know, Scooter ended up finding, before we had Overdose, and then he had found this rapper on MySpace called Asher Roth.
Yeah.
And I remember
he
sent me this freestyle Asher did over the Clips Mr. Me Too beat. And like, it was like, man, that shit's fire. So, you know, ended up bringing Asher down, and I was like, yo, I want to be his road manager. He was like, well, I can't decide that for him. You got to talk to him about it. And I remember me and Asher went to Cracker Barrel.
Cracker Barrel got the best pancakes.
Yeah, and we was just sitting there talking. I was like, "Yo, man, I want to be a road manager, bro. I believe in it. Like, I think, you know, we can really do some stuff." And he was like, "Man, I already, you know, told my two college roommates that they was gonna go on the road with him and stuff." So I was like, "All right, cool." I didn't say like, "Man, f you, man. I'm done with this."
Yeah.
I was like, "Well, how can I be, you know,
of assistance, of service,
some way, somehow?" Yeah. And so me working at radio, I started getting the DigiWax accounts. I started getting the other DJ record pools because I'm, I didn't mix, but I was an on-air personality, but I was still considered a DJ. Mm-hmm. So I was using that to try to connect with other DJs across the country. Mm. And I was working Kato's records and just sending them out through DigiWax and all these other DJs. So we did a mixtape with Drama and Cannon called The Greenhouse Effect. So when we did that mixtape, I just sent it out to all the DJs and other stuff. And then we started on his album, and we had the I Love College record, and I was sending that out. So I was like trying to be useful some way, somehow. Never got a dime out of it, but it was just more of like being a part of something. I just wanted to be a part of something that was great. And then obviously there was this little kid from Canada that Scooter had found, and he was like sending, he used to find like the weirdest stuff. Like he'll call you at like midnight and be like, yo, type in like monkey dunk contest. And it'd be like these chimpanzees like throwing up shit, like, yo, how the fuck do you find all this stuff? It's like, you just sitting on the internet, like, but he'll find the funniest stuff, and we'd like, even to this day, we'd be sending memes and stuff, like little stuff back and forth, that's just funny. And then, you know, that kid ended up being Justin Bieber. And I remember I was over his crib one day, and like Justin's mom was on the phone, you know, they're very religious, and you know, Scooter's Jewish, and so his mom was like, you know, they'd never been out of the country before. Out of Canada, and people think like, oh, it's just Canada, but like, nah, like there's a lot of differences even between Canada and America if you've never been to America before. And he was like, yeah, there are plenty of churches over here. Kenny knows churches here, talk to him. And I was like, hello? Yeah, nah, we got churches.
We got churches chicken.
We got churches. You know, there's plenty of churches. And you know, Justin was like, I didn't have a role when they first came down. He had did the deal with Usher, and then they took him to L.A. and signed him to Def Jam. And I was still just the dude driving him around. But, like, I used to take Justin to, like, my radio station because at this time I had moved to 95.5 to beat. I had more time on air. I was working the weekends. I was still on weekends, but, like, I would host a movie premiere or, you know, and I started moving around more. Then I started hosting parties and stuff like that, too.
Got it.
So the name was getting bigger and things like that. But, like, I would take him and be like, hey, one day you'll sit right here. This is with the mic. This is where they play the music. This is how they interview. And you're like, he's 13, just turned 14, I believe. And then I take him around to like little friends that he was starting to make and stuff like that. And then Ryan came along because Ryan was working with Usher. Ryan's now his co-founder at Drew House. And like, so it was just the four of us and his mom. And I remember Scooter called me one day and was like, yo, I need to find a security guard for Justin. And I was like, oh, I know plenty of guys. He was like, I want you to do it. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Now, granted, I got out the military. I gained like 80 pounds. Like when I tell y'all I had like three different internships and a job at T-Mobile, what I didn't tell you is I was surviving off of McDonald's dollar menu, Sonic, whatever I could get. And my homeboy worked at Subway. So we used to trade car chargers and all kind of stuff. And he'll let us eat Subway for free all the time. So this is all I'm eating. You know, some days I might have $3.21. I know for breakfast, I'm gonna get that sausage biscuit. For lunch, I'm gonna get a chicken sandwich. For dinner, I'm gonna get a, just like whatever the McDouble was. That was on a 99-cent thing, and I just add his tax, right? So that's how I survive
for most of
the
time.
So, you know, not sleeping. Damn sure wasn't working out.
Got it.
But then at that time, I was like, nah, man, because, you know, respect to my man, Big Rob. Big Rob was with the Jonas Brothers at the time. And then you had the show Rob and Big that was huge on MTV. So all I saw was little white people and big, but fat black people around. I'm like, nah, I don't want to be typecast into that because I know I want to be over here. Like, it's a bigger thing. And he broke it down. He was like, nah, it's not that. He was like, you're one of the only people I can trust. So if I'm not in the room, I need somebody to know, like, that got my back, that no other stuff is going to be going on and stuff like that. And you know, to help move the needle with whatever needs to be helped. And so I was like, I looked at it as an asterisk, like a Cordell Stewart. I can play multiple positions.
Got it.
So I said, all right, cool. Then, you know, we started taking off. Bieber became what it became. But I told him, I said, hey, I want to be able to transition when he turns 18 to, you know, a road manager or something else. Because Ryan at the time was a road manager. But then Ryan started realizing that, you know, his fashion and the violent stuff is really where he wanted to go more with it as well. And so we all just played our role, man. And you know, Bieber became what Bieber became, but we didn't know it was going to be nothing crazy like that. Like, I go back to 2007, 2008, you know, folks looking at us like, man, what y'all doing with this little white boy? That's how they were talking to us.
Yeah.
we going around Atlanta, like, man, where Kato at? That was the other artist that I had, you know, that I had at the time. And, you know, now they like, man, I remember y'all was running around town with that little white boy, boy. We always knew he was gonna be something. You know, okay. I had to go.
Like, it seems like the thing that the thread in all of this narrative is you identified what was needed in every situation. And then you went about fulfilling those things, whatever the needs were. So that is just being an amazing team player.
Yeah.
So that's what the thread is. So like, with that being said, to the younger, you know, entrepreneur who wants to step into management or wants to be an A&R or just whatever, right? How would you advise them on like? That part of that skill set, learning how to develop, how to be a team player, a role player?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing you got to do that I think a lot of people don't do, and it even took me a long time to realize, is like understand what your weaknesses are and know what your strengths are. Everyone can tell you that their 10 best traits about themselves. If I ask you to tell me the 10 worst traits, a lot of people are going to stutter. You got to identify what you're good at, what you're bad at, because you have to know where you can fit in and where you can't fit in. So if someone has a job opening or an internship, and you're like, oh man, I'm great at this, but I'm not that good at this, well, why don't you try to learn how to be better at that? And change those weaknesses and strengths. I see it like, it seems like today, like everybody wants to come in and be the top dog. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to come in with the biggest salaries and stuff. Because yeah, you know, it is hard to live, especially if you're living in like LA or New York, like it is something, but you have to figure out, one, yes, you do have to figure out how to survive. You also have to figure out how to still get that job experience. Mm-hmm. In the military, we used to call it OJT, on-the-job training. And it's like a lot of people miss that. They don't get that training and want to have the training because they think they know it all, or they learned it by looking at something on YouTube. That's cool, but nothing works better than you actually doing the job or working next to somebody that does the job.
No.
And I think it's about trying to find the balance in between survival and also being able to learn so you can do this on your own.
How, you know, you've been in the industry for a long time and all different aspects, and you're talking about different, just a different time then, like, how have you been able to balance and stay the course on your, you know, on your journey and your road? From one, like, back in the days, there was, like, traditional A&R. Like, you're really developing artists. Even talking about, like, Justin Bieber. That wasn't, like, it just didn't happen overnight. And some of those, you know, the other artists, and I've seen artists that you're working with now, there's a true artist development. But we're in a time now where artist development really doesn't seem like a thing. How do you balance, like, that and kind of the quick turn, no social, TikTok, you know, phase that we're in right now in music without, you know, being jaded or being like, yo, this industry has just changed so much?
It's twofold. It does make it difficult because financially I think it makes it more difficult now financially because everyone goes for the quick one, or the labels are giving these quick deals. And so it's like, you can survive for a moment, but I try to find something that, I look at it as like almost like a legacy artist, but it's like, I wanna be a part of things that are gonna be around in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Everything might, and I'm such a sports guy, I kinda equate it to that. It's like, everyone might not have the 20-year LeBron career, but like, Monte Ellis had a great run. You know what I'm saying? This person had a great run. So I look at it as like, every artist is different. And so it's like, I'm not trying to find the next Justin Bieber. I just recently started my label, From the Mound Music Group. And the reason I finally wanted to get into the label side of it is like, I do want to be able to develop artists, but I also want to be able to take those risks and put it out. Because I think a lot of times too, is what we get caught up in is the numbers. Mm-hmm. We're caught up in the social numbers. We're caught up in this, but like, people love music. If you look at some of these other records that are charting from like the Saweeties and all these other ones, they're sampling music that came from the 90s, early 2000s right now, that are becoming hits. Even the other girl, Callie, who got the Area Codes record from like Luda and them, like, and she's claimed that she never heard the original, but I'm like, somebody heard it. But yeah. You see what I'm saying? It's still coming, and they still like it, so that's telling me that they're loving this. And I see, like, the success that a SZA has when she puts out music, and these the Frank Oceans, and, like, but people, there are music fans out here, and I still believe in, like, let's put it out and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I never know if there's any cracks in the wall until I start pouring water and turning the lights on and, you know, start running the water to see where the problems are. And then we can fix those as we go, as long as there's a calculated approach to when you come out the gate.
Look at your artist, Dixon. Mm-hmm. Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
Not too long ago, right?
Oscar nominated, Golden Globe nominated, 3-time Grammy, yeah.
All of
it. Yeah.
And you know, he's in a genre, R&B, that people feel is sort of at a, I don't know, crossroads, or it's not growing, or the numbers aren't there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the numbers are what they are. Why are you doubling down?
So there's a couple of things. So the artists that I had in the past, I felt like I had to prove people in the business, and there was a chip on my shoulder, I guess, that I had. And maybe it was a self-proclaimed thing that I did to myself, because I am very competitive, but at the same time, I feel like, you know, I left Scooter and Justin 10 years ago, but, like, there's people that still think that I work with Scooter and Justin and that I have, and there's been a chip on my shoulder of, like, you come from something so big, so global, that that's your last piece of success that people look at you as. So I felt like I had to prove that I could build talent and build artists. So I did take, you know, one person that was an actor and trying to be in music, but now he has 2 gold records, 1 about to be platinum, that he never had before me. That, you know, I took on another female who had, you know, minimal success from being on socials and things, and her numbers started getting better, started doing, did her first headlining tour, sold it out in minutes, like, you know, was building. So, and then I started the label, because now I'm like, all right, I'm showing you on this scale that it can be what it can be. I still believe in the music. Someone like Dixon, now the funny story is, so Dixon actually is the younger cousin of Kato, the first artist that Scooter had that we had.
Wow.
So I've known him since he was a teenager, because he used to come into our sessions and stuff. And we would keep in touch over the years, because he was on The Voice in 2016, known Pharrell's team and all that stuff. So I would keep up with what he was doing and stuff. And then during the pandemic, he had called me and was like, bro, like, come on, man, it's time. Like, we got to do this together and this and this. And then, you know, he had told me what he'd been doing. He had been writing all these different songs and producing. I knew he played a lot of different instruments, but he found himself as well. And he was, like, take it to a whole other level. And so for him, it's like, we're in the R&B space because he's black, but he makes pop music. Like, he wrote Pure Honey. He wrote Virgo's Groove on Beyonce's Renaissance. Like, that whole rap on Pure Honey was what he penned word for word. People think he did the singing part. And then on Virgo's Groove, he actually did the ending part when people thought he did. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's so versatile with everything that he does. And so there's, like, a huge longevity play. And I'm fighting with him now. I'm not fighting with him, but I'm fighting for him as an artist, because as a producer, writer, his deals are way bigger than as an artist. But one thing that I do love, and Shari Bryan and I talk about this a lot, like, Shari's really big into, like, developing and trying to develop, and she's trying to prove a point that, like, yo, we can develop artists and they can get to a certain level, and I have that faith in that we can do that. So I'm doubling down on it. Like, this next project that we got, like, I've been listening to it every day.
Him and Camper, right?
Him and Camper been, like, locked in. They like the new Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, bro. Like,
I can't wait
on some real shit. And it's like,
Camper's that's my dog.
And it's some stuff that we've been, you know, really putting together, and I'm really excited about it. And it's like, got to roll it out right. And it's like, oh, it has to look like this. And I'm like, still music at the end of the day. People gonna move how the people move to it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he's building a niche fan base. We just did the Lamont Park Juneteenth performance. Him
yesterday.
And my artist Price both performed on stage yesterday. And that was cool. And it's the one thing I love about doing shows like that, I don't care about, like, if it was 1,000 people singing word for word. I want to see the guy who never heard of him before.
Be like,
by the end, they start jamming and like, damn, and then they pulling out their phone, they shazamming or trying to find. I like to find
the music. Yeah.
So we do those stages all the time, because everybody's not gonna know you, and I love that.
Yeah.
I love looking at the crowd by the end.
Yeah, and those are the ones that when you create the fan that follows you for the rest of your career.
Absolutely.
Discovery.
Yeah.
Discovery is still there.
Yeah.
Good music. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That's it.
Yeah. And you know what? With music, too, we still deal with, man. Like, I got an incredible new guy. Shout out my man, Brady Turner. You know, Brady plays guitar, piano, writes really well, sings well. So, like, we had Brady, me and my man Cass and Sebastian Cole. We've been locked in, and we cut 12 different records. And, like, I don't even tell people. I just press play, and everyone's like, yo, who was that? You're like, right. Everywhere, every room I go into, now I don't even say who it is. I don't show no pictures, nothing. I just press play, and it's like, you know, music's still in that funny space. So if you're white, we're automatically. Now I'm in these pop rooms left and right, me and Tank used to talk about this a lot because, you know, as a black artist, if you're making pop music, they still want you to start on the urban side. You still got to start it over here, got to move here. And that's the fight we fight. But, like, if I can be a bridge to even connect that even more, that's what I'm really looking forward to doing.
I'm excited. Again, just following, you know, from a distance, your career and your ability to stay in the rooms and facilitate, but also always championing other people and younger artists and developing them. And that's something we have to just get back to, and not only just the music industry, but just in the human industry.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And you've been able to align yourself with amazing people, but you've done the work. You've put in the work, and that's a testament.
You feel like this is your best season of life? Like, you finally have figured it all out? It's, like, all culminating? Because, like, we shared before the cameras rolled, you know, you made a little announcement personal online, and then your son and the label, and I feel like it feels like it's all coming together for you.
You know, family-wise, I think I'm there and I'm growing there and getting there because I've been, you know, praying for, like, the right situation. I've always been dating intentional. You know, I got divorced. Like, my son and me and my son's mom, my ex-wife, we got married when 27, 28. It didn't last. It was, you know, a very fast situation. So I've been divorced almost 11, 12 years. And then, you know, the Justin stuff takes off. Now you like I'm still from the east side of Atlanta. I'm going to all these different places, and I'm like, what?
You know, why?
I had my fun. You know what I'm saying? I had a lot of fun. I was like, you know, all these different countries and stuff, it was cool to be in. But now I'm at an age where I'm like, all right, I understand what life is in balance. So I love where the family life is. I'm working on a gratitude part of where I am career-wise because I've been in the fights. Like, I haven't been on the Billboard list or this list and that list. Do I think that I've deservedly done the work to be on these lists? Absolutely. But I don't try to get caught in the popularity contest of it all. And I guess, you know, I got a message from a publicist friend of mine last year. It was like, I did a post of, like, I put out all my accomplishments on the post, and I was like, I don't know. I used the Jay-Z line of, like, maybe they'll pay attention to me, you know, next year or something, and then somebody took offense to it. I'm like, man, I don't care. So I just try to let the work show for it, and then I stopped worrying about that because now, you know, I own a vodka called Sunny Vodka.
Saw that.
We're, you know, in every BevMo in the state of California. We have a national distribution, but we're really, like, really honed in on California because it's California made. It's smoother, way better than Tito's. I gotta get y'all a couple bottles.
Can
over
we
here,
please?
You can put over there. That's easy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're in, like, all the cool, nice nightlife spots and a lot of the good restaurants and stuff. And then I have a restaurant in New York.
The Cabin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's myself, Jay Wells, Jay Williams. And
Duke Jay Williams?
Hey.
Diehard Duke fan.
Oh, so I'm a big Carolina guy.
We've had this. Yeah, we've gone back and forth.
We'll have to have another episode. We just talk about sports.
Unfortunately, like, my closest friends went to Duke, which is really funny. But yeah, so me, Jay Will, and my man Joey and Dre and DeMond, it's like a brotherhood that we put this thing together. We had a vision about it like 8-9 years ago, and we've been open for 5 years now. And then, you know, I'm still with H Word Group, which is based out here in L.A. I'm an ambassador for them now. But just, like, all the little stuff, because, you know, the athletes still call me, the actors, the actresses, like, people want to go out, people need reservations, or people need this or that, or, you know, they trying to go to Delilah Vegas and set this up and stuff. I'm still that guy that people, I want to say they have to call, but like 9 times out of 10, if you want to get it done or get in there, yeah, you got to call me, right? Or somebody on our team that knows you, and we've opened it up to a lot of different people over the time, even, you know, in the city. Like, I've lived in LA longer as an adult than I have anywhere else in my life.
Yeah.
So I've this is my home, you know what I'm saying? And I take it as much with that authority and stuff. I'm very involved politically within the city and state politics. And so, you know, I don't want to go anywhere. I want a lot of stuff to change here. But so I don't get caught up in a lot of the billboards and the vibe stuff anymore, because I'm like, man, I'm gonna just put the work out. We're gonna put great music out. If everybody's touring and we're all doing House of Blues, then that's cool. I would love to do stadiums and arenas. Everyone doesn't always get to that point. If I have one that does that, that's incredible.
Yep.
But as long as I know that whoever I'm working with, they can provide for their family, they're happy, they're content, then that means I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, because I realized that I was born to be a servant of sense, right? So I'm being able to serve you. So I use my knowledge and I use my expertise that I can be able to serve you better to help people get to that point. Because, you know, this is cool being in front of the camera, and I'm sorry I had to look this good when I came here. you don't never have to see me. As long as the work's being done,
yeah,
I'm going to be in my house. You know what I'm saying? I'll throw down in the kitchen. I'll be grilling out. You know, everybody welcome. We can have a real function at the crib, but I'll be content with that, you know, because my kids are good and my family.
Love it. Love it.
Two most important days.
Service and
that's,
love.
That's the title. We just got the title of the episode.
Love when that happens.
Love when that happens. Listen, man, please, 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 please come back. Yeah. Please, please let us pull up on you. Maybe we do something at your crib. Even, you know what I mean? Yeah. Some barbecue function type thing. But I for me, you know, as an executive, watching you and watch the way you've moved around LA has been it's actually been like you inspire a lot of people. Don't think otherwise. You actually inspire a lot of us. And though we don't, you know, because I think a lot of us didn't have access to you, like who are from out here, like people that knew you from Atlanta and other, but like didn't have access to you. And now I think you're giving people access. And we got to give you your flowers for the way you've managed to navigate a lot of worlds that guys that look like us don't get to navigate. You know what I'm saying? And that says a lot. So, you know, because we know, again, getting in the room is one thing, but staying in the room through some turbulence, too, is another thing. So, you know, your flowers, man. Thank you for having us.
Sure.
Yo, live, leaving from the Dream Hotel. Chief, Malik, Kenny Hamilton, it's been a sweet life.